Persuader by Lee Child. For Jane and the Shorebirds. Chapter 1. The cop climbed out of his car exactly 4 minutes before he got shot. He moved like he knew his fate in advance. He pushed the door against the resistance of a stiff hinge and swiveled slowly on the worn vinyl seat and planted both feet flat on the road. Then he grasped the door frame with both hands and heaved himself up and out. He stood in the cold, clear air for a second and then turned and pushed the door shut again behind him, held still for a second longer. Then he stepped forward and leaned against the side of the hood, up near the headlight. The car was a 7-year-old Chevy Caprice. It was black and had no police markings, but it had 3 radio antennas and plain chrome hubs. Most cops you talk to swear the Caprice is the best police vehicle ever built. This guy looked like he agreed with them. He looked like a veteran plainclothes detective with the hold of the motor pool at his disposal. Like he drove the ancient Chevy because he wanted to. Like he wasn't interested in the new Fords. I could see that kind of stubborn old-timer personality in the way he held himself. He was wide and bulky in a plain dark suit made from some kind of heavy wool. He was tall but stooped. An old man. He turned his head and looked north and south along the road, and then craned his thick neck to glance back over his shoulder at the college gate. He was 30 yards away from me. The college gate itself was purely a ceremonial thing. 2 tall brick pillars just rose up from a long expanse of tended lawn behind the sidewalk. Connecting the pillars was a high double gate made from iron bars, bent and folded and twisted into fancy shapes. It was shiny black. It looked like it had just been repainted. It was probably repainted after every winter. It had no security function. Anybody who wanted to avoid it could drive straight across the lawn. It was wide open, anyway. There was a driveway behind it with little knee-high iron posts set 8 feet back on either side. They had latches. Each half of the gate was latched into one of them, wide open. The driveway led on down to a huddle of mellow brick buildings about 100 yards away. The buildings had steep, mossy roofs and were overhung by trees. The driveway was lined with trees. The sidewalk was lined with trees. There were trees everywhere. Their leaves were just about coming in. They were tiny and curled and bright green. 6 months from now, they would be big and red and golden, and photographers would be swarming all over the place taking pictures of them for the college brochure. 20 yards beyond the cop and his car and the gate was a pickup truck parked on the other side of the road. It was tight against the curb. It was facing toward me, 50 yards away. It looked a little out of place. It was faded red and had a big bull bar on the front. The bar was dull black and looked like it had been bent and straightened a couple of times. There were 2 men in the cab. They were young, tall, clean-cut, fair-haired. They were just sitting there, completely still, gazing forward, looking at nothing in particular. They weren't looking at the cop. They weren't looking at me. I was set up to the south. I had an anonymous brown panel van parked outside a music store. The store was the kind of place you find near a college gate. It had used CDs in racks out on the sidewalk and posters in the windows behind them advertising bands people had never heard of. I had the van's rear doors open. There were boxes stacked inside. I had a sheaf of paperwork in my hands. I was wearing a coat because it was a cold April morning. I was wearing gloves because the boxes in the van had loose staples where they'd been torn open. I was wearing a gun, because I often do. It was wedged in my pants, at the back, under the coat. It was a Colt Anaconda, which is a huge stainless steel revolver chambered for the .44 Magnum cartridge. It was 13.5 inches long and weighed almost 4 pounds. Not my first choice of weapon. It was hard and heavy and cold, and I was aware of it all the time. I paused in the middle of the sidewalk and looked up from my papers and heard the distant pickup's engine start. It stayed where it was, just idling. White exhaust pooled around its rear wheels. The air was cold. It was early, and the street was deserted. I stepped behind my van and glanced down the side of the music store toward the college buildings. saw a black Lincoln Town Car waiting outside one of them. There were two guys standing next to it. I was 100 yards away, but neither one of them looked like a limo driver. Limo drivers don't come in pairs, and they don't look young and heavy, and they don't act tense and wary. These guys looked exactly like bodyguards. The building the Lincoln was waiting outside of looked like some kind of a small dormitory. It had Greek letters over a big wooden door. I watched, and the big wooden door opened up, and a young, thin guy stepped out. He looked like a student. He had long, messy hair, and was dressed like a homeless person, but carried a bag that looked like shiny, expensive leather. One of the bodyguards stood point, while the other held the car door, and the young, thin guy tossed his bag onto the back seat and slid right in after it. He pulled the door shut behind himself. I heard it slam, faint and muffled, from 100 yards away. The bodyguards glanced around for a second and then got in the front together, and a short moment later the car moved away. 30 yards behind it, a college security vehicle snuffled slowly in the same direction, not like it was intending to make up a convoy, but like it just happened to be there anyway. There were two rent-a-cops in it. They were slumped down low in their seats, and they looked aimless and bored. I took my gloves off and tossed them into the back of my van, stepped out into the road where my view was better. I saw the Lincoln come up the driveway at a moderate speed. It was black and shiny and immaculate. It had plenty of chrome on it, plenty of wax. The college cops were way behind it. It paused at the ceremonial gate and turned left and came south toward the black police caprice, toward me. What happened next occupied 8 seconds, but it felt like the blink of an eye. The faded red pickup moved off the curb 20 yards back. It accelerated hard. It caught up with the Lincoln and pulled out and passed it, exactly level with the cop's caprice. It came within a foot of the cop's knees. Then it accelerated again and pulled a little ways ahead, and its driver swung the wheel hard, and the corner of the bull bar smashed square into the Lincoln's front fender. The pickup driver kept the wheel turned and his foot hard down and forced the Lincoln off the road onto the shoulder. The grass tore up and the Lincoln slowed radically and then hit a tree head on. There was the boom of metal caving and tearing and headlight glass shattering, and there was a big cloud of steam and the tree's tiny green leaves shook and quivered noisily in the still morning air. Then the two guys in the pickup came out shooting. They had black machine pistols and were firing them at the Lincoln. The sound was deafening, and I could see arcs of spent brass raining down on the blacktop. Then the guys were pulling at the Lincoln's doors, hauling them open. One of them leaned into the back and started dragging the thin kid out. The other was still firing his gun into the front. Then he reached into his pocket left-handed and came out with some kind of a grenade, tossed it inside the Lincoln and slammed the doors and grabbed his buddy and the kid by the shoulders and turned them away and hauled them down into a crouch. There was a loud, bright explosion inside the Lincoln. All 6 windows shattered. I was more than 20 yards away and felt every bit of the concussion. Pebbles of glass blew everywhere. They made rainbows in the sun. Then the guy who had tossed the grenade scrambled up and sprinted for the passenger side of the pickup, and the other straight-armed the kid inside the cab and crowded right in after him. The doors slammed shut, and I saw the kid trapped in there on the center seat. I saw terror in his face. It was white with shock, and right through the dirty windshield I saw his mouth opening in a silent scream. I saw the driver working the gears and heard the engine roaring and the tires squealing, and then the truck was coming directly at me. It was a Toyota. I could see Toyota on the grill behind the bull bar. It rode high on its suspension, and I could see a big black differential at the front. It was the size of a soccer ball. 4-wheel drive, big fat tires, dense and faded paint that hadn't been washed since it left the factory. It was coming straight at me. I had less than a second to decide. I flipped the tail of my coat and pulled out the Colt, aimed very carefully, and fired once at the Toyota's grill. The big gun flashed and roared and kicked in my hand. The huge .44 slug shattered the radiator. I fired again at the left front tire, blew it out in a spectacular explosion of black rubber debris. Yards of blown tread whipped through the air. The truck slewed and stopped with the driver's side facing me, 10 yards away. I ducked behind the back of my van and slammed the rear doors and came out on the sidewalk and fired again at the left rear tire. Same result, rubber everywhere. The truck crashed down on its left side rims at a steep angle. The driver opened his door and spilled out on the blacktop and scrambled up on one knee. He had his gun in the wrong hand. He juggled it across, and I waited until I was fairly sure he was going to point it at me. Then I used my left hand to cradle my right forearm against the Colt's 4-pound weight and aimed carefully at center mass, like I had been taught a long time ago, and pulled the trigger. The guy's chest seemed to explode in a huge cloud of blood. The skinny kid was rigid inside the cab, just staring in shock and horror. But the second guy was out of the cab and scrambling around the front of the hood toward me. His gun was coming around at me. I swiveled left and paused a beat and cradled my forearm, aimed at his chest, fired. Same result. He went down on his back behind the fender in a cloud of red vapor. Now the skinny kid was moving in the cab. I ran for him and pulled him out right over the first guy's body, ran him back to my van. He was limp with shock and confusion. I shoved him into the passenger seat and slammed the door on him and spun around and headed for the driver's side. In the corner of my eye, I saw a third guy coming right at me, reaching into his jacket. Some tall, heavy guy, dark clothes. I braced my arm and fired and saw the big red explosion in his chest at exactly the same split second. I realized it was the old cop from the Caprice, and he had been reaching into his pocket for his badge. The badge was a gold shield in a worn leather holder, and it flew up out of his hand and tumbled end over end and landed hard against the curb right in front of my van. Time stood still. I stared at the cop. He was on his back in the gutter. His whole chest was a mess of red. It was all over him. There was no welling or pumping, no sign of a heartbeat. There was a big, ragged hole in his shirt. He was completely still. His head was turned and his cheek was hard against the blacktop. His arms were flung out and I could see pale veins in his hands. I was aware of the blackness of the road and the vivid green of the grass and the bright blue of the sky. I could hear the thrill of the breeze and the new leaves over the gunshots still roaring in my ears. I saw the skinny kid staring out through my van's windshield at the downed cop and then staring at me. I saw the college security cruiser coming left out of the gate. It was moving slower than it should have been. Dozens of shots had been fired. Maybe they were worried about where their jurisdiction began and where it ended. Maybe they were just scared. I saw their pale pink faces behind their windshield. They were turned in my direction. Their car was doing maybe 15 miles an hour. It was crawling straight at me. I glanced at the gold shield in the gutter. The metal was worn smooth by a lifetime of use. I glanced at my van. Stood completely still. One thing I learned a long time ago is that it's easy enough to shoot a man, but there's absolutely no way to unshoot one.